Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Frederik Abbas is a Dutch DJ and producer who started his career in 1993. Since 2005, every second Saturday of the month, Frederik has been resident DJ of Amsterdam's biggest nightclub, Escape Amsterdam. In 2010, Frederik started producing his own original tracks with great success. Frederik performs from Ibiza to Los Angeles, Mexico to Singapore, and all around the globe. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Frederik Abbas.
Where do we find you in the world and how are you doing?
First of all, I'm doing fine at the moment, working very hard and lots of shows all over the world. Last weekend, I've been DJing in Courchevel. Courchevel is like a ski resort in Les Trois Vallées in France.
Okay.
And this weekend, I'm having a weekend off. I really reserved this weekend for working on my music, and the next show will be in Curaçao. Curaçao is in the Netherlands Antilles, and I will play there on Saturday.
And you based in Amsterdam, correct?
I've been living here since 1999, and before I lived in Leiden. Leiden is a small city in the Netherlands, and I studied over there Dutch law. So something totally different.
Let's rewind. So you mentioned that you studied Dutch law. So at what point did you decide, cool, you want to be in the music entertainment world and DJing? And how did that journey accumulate to where we are currently?
I'm having a friend, and he's a friend of mine since I was like 14 years old. His name is Marnix, and Marnix is the founder of Loveland. And Loveland, maybe you will know it. Loveland is a big festival organization in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And Monix was invited to DJ in Marbella. Marbella is in Spain.
Yep.
For about 2 months. And I'm now talking about 1993. And in 1993, we still worked with the vinyl records.
Yes.
And then Monix asked me it was 1992. And Monix just asked me, could you please buy my vinyls? Because we nearly had the same taste for music, the same house music. And then he went to Marbella and I bought his records. And then he came back to Amsterdam. And then he was listening, I think, about 10 records or something like that. And he all liked them, all 10. And then I was giving him the records because I bought them for him. And then I was really feeling shit about it because I loved the records. And I was already, during the same period he was in Marbella, I could borrow his turntables. So I was spinning a lot during the days. And so I gave him the records. And I went to the record shop back again and I ordered the same records,
yeah,
to have it on in my own file, and then I started, and then suddenly there was a friend of mine, and he asked me if I wanted to play at a student party, and there was in a smaller place in Utrecht, but my first show was for around 2,500 people. And then I was thinking, oh my God, can I do that? You know, this is the first time I'm going to play. Can I do that for 2,500 people? And then I was thinking, okay, let's do it. Why not? So that was my first gig. So that's all in 1992. So that's already like 32 years ago.
Was this pre to studying law or after?
No, I started studying law in 1995 and I didn't finish it, to be honest. And, while I was studying, you know, it was too boring for me. I really didn't like it. But
so while you were studying, you were carrying on doing your DJing, correct? And you've been doing it ever since.
Exactly. Yeah.
Correct. And when did you decide to start creating and producing your own music?
At first, you had to be a good DJ to receive a lot of, you know, requests for new shows.
Yes.
And, but at a sudden moment, the times changed. And the time changed in a way like, in the beginning, you had like two totally different jobs. Like one is a producer and two is a DJ. And there were two totally separate things. But then at a certain moment, a DJ had to produce. So if you didn't produce as a DJ, you know, you couldn't grow. So at that moment, I realized, okay, now I really have to produce some records. So that was the moment I started producing. And actually, the most funny thing is the one who really helped me was my first production. His name is Nicky Romero. You
yes.
actually know him.
Yeah.
And so Nicky, you know, he helped me with the first record when we were together in the studio. And at a certain moment, Nick said to me, "So sorry, Frederick, but I'm really too busy. You know, I don't have any time anymore because I'm producing such a lot of records. So I don't have time. But in the meantime, now I'm checking Beatport. So the first track I produced, the name of the title of the track is Sao Paulo. And the track was released in August 2010.
Okay. Obviously, you've already mentioned that in order to grow, you needed to produce as well. So was that avenue of taking on production an easy learning curve, or did it take a while for you to get into it?
It takes a while, and to be honest, I'm still being helped by a person who really makes it off. And you know, I'm just telling him the big lines and everything, and then we really work together. Okay. To be honest, I could not do it alone, absolutely not. And actually, I don't have the time for it. But all the DJs who are busy, they always get help of somebody else, because
yes, absolutely.
If you're busy with your shows and other things, you don't have the time for it to do it all alone.
Going into your creative brain, yes, I know you collaborate with other people or other persons. So when you create a new song from 0 to 3 to 4 minutes, what is the motivation? What invigorates it? What inspires it? Is it easy every time or sometimes difficult? Let's dive into your creative brain in creating a song.
To be honest, I think it's absolutely not easy. And you have to be very creative, and you have to every time you have to change your plans, and you have to change the things you made. And sometimes some productions, you know, you can realize them in a pretty small time. But there are also productions are really the my last production, I spent a lot of time on it because I was absolutely not happy with the result. And now I'm happy, but yeah, sometimes it goes fast, sometimes it does not.
So now your set when you DJ, obviously, am I correct in my understanding that it's a combination of your own production and your own songs and remixes?
To be honest, I've only made one remix and the rest are my own songs.
Oh, okay. So they're all your own songs. That's cool. I've interviewed quite a few DJs, and it's quite interesting that you guys have to have a sort of a sixth sense of understanding the room and understanding the crowd and how to adjust the music to what the feeling and the response to the audience is. So that sixth sense, does that come? Obviously, it's natural now because you've been doing it for a long time. In the beginning, was that something you had to learn, or was that something that came naturally for you?
To be honest, I think there are a lot of persons, they have it naturally in them, but I really do have to learn it from just testing some records and see how the audience will react. But I'm convinced there are producers who have it a lot more in their blood.
But also the thing is that when you have to learn something, and compared to it being natural, you, because you take that time and energy, because it's a passion of yours to do what you're doing and you're learning these other things, then you can also become a master at it because you want to encompass all the levels in order for it to be what it needs to be.
Yeah, true.
I'm sure you have had sets, you've traveled around the world. Sometimes the venues are smaller compared to bigger venues. Obviously, it's the same energy that you put into your presentation. But what's the difference for you, do you believe, in a venue that has a smaller crowd to one that has a much, much bigger crowd?
Yeah, it's really depending. To be honest, if you just ask me in percentages, like where did you have the best reactions, like the best vibe?
Mm.
I must admit, it's more in smaller venues that the DJ booth is really, really close to the audience, to the dance floor. But I've had it as well on really bigger venues that the vibe was amazing. But if I just look to percentages, in smaller clubs, the energy normally is better. Yeah.
Well, that makes sense because even if you look at a smaller area, potentially smaller amount of people, it allows the energy to be contained and it can like rotate in a circle and build and build and build. Whereas if it's in a massive or bigger venue with lots of people, it might dissipate as it gets nearer to the back of the room and it might lose its energy. Do you understand? Does it make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, I fully agree.
I know it's very much like this at festivals and at concerts. But when you're performing at a club, are a lot of people busy on their cell phones, videoing, tweeting, posting? Does that happen? And from the person receiving or seeing that, do you feel that it takes away from the energy in the room, or it's just where society is at the moment?
I think the last point, like that's where the site is at this moment. You do have some people who are the whole night with the phone.
Yes.
But yeah, you do have that kind of people. But you also do have people who try to get one or two really great videos and forget the phone later on. But I can't say that the videoing is really negative, because it's also DJs have to realize that's also that part of their success.
Yeah.
Because posting videos on Instagram and everything, you know, it's kind of promotion for the DJ. So you can't only say it's only negative.
So it's another marketing tool in your canon. You mentioned vinyls. Now, I love me a CD. I still budget my CDs every month because I love the aesthetic of holding something. I love the journey of choosing which CD I'm going to buy. I love the pictures, the images. For me, it's a energy exchange and a thank you to you guys for all the hard work of creating the music. I'm not sure if you're aware, but CDs, vinyls, and cassettes are making a massive comeback. Vinyls last year in the UK alone, 5.9 million, the biggest since 1990. CDs are up on an upward trajectory, so are cassettes. But we've also got these digital platforms that people consume music on. What are your observations and perceptions of each?
So first start with the vinyl. I love the vinyl and I love to play with the vinyl. To be honest, I haven't played with the vinyl now. I think for 10 years or something like that.
Mm.
And the feeling with vinyl is it's still like, the sound is how do you call it? I still think that the sound is better.
Yes.
With the vinyl, you hear the bass line in another way than you hear it digitally right now. But yeah, the negative thing is that if somebody hits the turntable, you know, it's gonna scratch. Like that's the negative thing. And even if you're a little bit drunk, it sometimes happens, you know, it's not a good combination with vinyl, because then if you hit it, it's like the sound is getting better and bad, worse and worse. And about CDs, to be honest, I don't see a really big benefit if I compare the MP3 files and the CDs. The only thing is, if you want to listen it at home, I can imagine in your way that you really prefer CD because you have a nice cover, a nice image. And so I can imagine that. But for me, I was one of the latest DJs in Amsterdam who kept on playing with the vinyl tracks. But suddenly there was a moment that you couldn't find any new good music, house music on vinyl. So I had to change. So then I went to CDs, and you know what was very difficult for me? I was very bad to get known all the titles of the records to remember. So actually what was very easy with the vinyl is that you saw the covers, you know, it was a yellow cover with red, and then I always knew, okay, that one I have to search for the green one over the red.
Yeah.
No, the CDs was not easy as well, because the problem was, you know, when the CD started being popular, I only downloaded one track per CD. So the CD you bought is just like a CD without anything on it. So there was not a cover on it.
Yes, I understand.
So that was really like very difficult for me to switch from vinyl to a CD.
Yeah.
And then later on, the switch from CD to MP3 was actually more easy, especially right now, because when you have the new CD players, you see the cover again with the colors.
Yeah, yeah.
But to be honest, when I started DJing in 1992, I was not really into all the artist names and everything.
Okay.
And now, you know, let's say the last 15 years, I concentrate a lot more on which artist produced which track. And so, you know, you get used to it.
What's coming up for you? Obviously, you're traveling around the world doing events and DJing. Any other snippets or sneak peeks that you can give us?
Last year, I didn't make a lot of productions, and now I want to make at least one production per 2 months. So I think I will release about, let's say, 6, 7, or 8 tracks this year.
Okay.
So that's a bit more than average in my way. I got a lot of shows outside the Netherlands. So in Netherlands Antilles, it's called Curaçao. I will be very often. I will play there once per 3 weeks the whole year, especially in the winter time. And I will be in South America a lot. And I'm now busy with a contract in Brazil for Sao Paulo and Rio. In the summer, I will go to the US, to Los Angeles, Las Vegas, and New York. So lots of good shows are on the schedule.
You love traveling, but does it ever get tiring? In and out of your suitcase, one country, the country, or it's just, okay, you're so used to it now that it's like, okay, you've got a routine and you know how to manage everything.
I really got a routine. And you know what is very important? So it's very easy for me because I sleep very well. Mm. And if you sleep very well in the plane and you get used to jet lags or time differences, you know, I always take my 9 hours or sometimes 8 hours or at least 7 hours.
Yeah.
Sometimes let's say Los Angeles, the time difference is like -9 from the timers with the Netherlands. And always the first night, I already sleep like 8, 8.5 hours. So, you know, I can sleep very, very easy. So that is very, very important that you sleep easy. So for me, it's the whole traveling is like a routine. As long as you keep on sporting, I think sporting is very important to stay healthy, to eat healthy.
Mm.
So what I do is my food is always very healthy. So I eat bad food, let's say, once per month, and the rest of the days, I always try to eat very, very healthy with vegetables and fish and everything.
Yeah.
And fruits every day. So that's a way for me. You know, maybe for other persons, other ingredients will work, but this is...
That's how it works for you.
That's how it works for me.
The podcast is listened to throughout the world. So as a final message, what would you like to say?
I would like to say that everybody in this world has to follow, you know, their own thoughts and their own passion.
Mm-hmm.
If I look to my situation, I was 17 when I started DJing. At that time, I'm now 49. At that time, the DJing was really like negative in a way, like a lot of drugs was being used by DJs in that time. There was not a lot of money in the scene. So that all changed in the last 32 years, you know, like drugs are still being used, but it's more, very more professional, professionalized job right now. And my parents were really like always telling me, please stop the DJing. It's nothing for you. And
yeah,
please don't do it. And then I was very stubborn and I was really telling them, you know, I'm going to do it and I want it. And that's the message I want to give to everybody. If you feel something in life you want to do, just do it. But just keep in mind always like stay healthy and don't do too many stupid things.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.